You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Moment segment coming up later in this episode because, well, it's a good one for Heat fans. This is going to be a good episode. We're going to talk a little bit about the latest rumors or possibilities, I guess, surrounding Kyle Lowry and whether or not it would be a good fit for him to reunite with some former Toronto teammates here in Miami. Kawhi Leonard's injury situation and how that might impact Miami. But I'll start off talking a little bit about the Michelob Ultra moment, one that came for Heat history in 2004, the acquisition of Shaquille O'Neal. Talk about enjoying the moment. That was a lot of fun. I don't know for anybody who's listening to this show, there's probably some people who are fairly young and might not have been immersed in NBA basketball, maybe weren't really following it as closely as I was at that point in time. My fandom felt like it was still very much in its infancy. I was a steady fan, but also, I think, a peripheral fan. It felt like a very different time. Like, not only did I have my own life outside of covering basketball and everything else that I wasn't really focused on, but the avenues that you could get to really enjoy basketball and the offseason were not the way that they are now. Like, the offseason for a lot of fans, I think, is almost as important as the games themselves, if not more so. You're so plugged into the draft, which didn't feel like that big a deal. There weren't scouting reports from all over the place. You weren't getting 20 different people telling you who the top pick was. European players still carried a pretty heavy stigma to them, so the draft was not as appealing as it is today. The combine was in existence, but it didn't really even feel like all that much. Free agency happened, and you heard about things. You saw your report in the daily paper, and it was kind of just brushed off. Maybe we'd get a blurb here or there on ESPN, but not really much focus. And so it was just a very, very different time, I think. I mean, I can't really put into words unless you lived it. There were no Adrian Wojnarowskis. There were no Shams Charanias. There were no newsbreakers. There was no Twitter. So you weren't following along every second. You weren't tracking planes from Miami to Cleveland, I can tell you that much. And you certainly weren't listening to Bakers and Akron and whether or not they were changing the color scheme of the LeBron James website. It was all very, not hush-hush necessarily, but it was behind the scenes. And then you would see news breaking late at night, and there was no way of reporting it. If it wasn't something that was handed down to your local news desk, you weren't going to really hear it. And by the time it got to your paper, well, maybe it was a day late. It didn't really seem to have that same kind of impact as it does nowadays. Or maybe it was more of an impact. It's still kind of hard to gauge, again, unless you were there. But the news that Shaquille O'Neal was coming to Miami, maybe not as big as the big three, because it was different. The big three had a longer, more powerful shift. There was a lot more of that tracking that I was talking about. And that's where it was really interesting, where, you know, you were wondering whether or not Dwayne was looking elsewhere. And then you heard possibilities about Chris Bosh, and there was Carlos Boozer and other names, Amari Stoudemire, other players that were linked to Miami, potential options. And of course, the biggest whale of them all, LeBron James, at the peak of his career. And you start to think about that and you start to hear it. Of course, then there was that news report, I think during ESPN, I want to say with Michael Wilbon, maybe I'm misremembering, but I believe it was an interview from Dwayne Wade's summer camp, I think in Chicago, or it might have been in Miami. I can't really recall exactly where. And Chris Bosh was in his office, probably presumably in Toronto, maybe even his hometown in Dallas, and just talking to Wilbon and saying, yes, we're going to come to Miami. And then they asked him if LeBron was coming. There was no idea. And then, of course, there was the decision, all that build up and everything else. And finally, it gets consummated. The big three coming to Miami. Everybody's freaking out. That was, you know, you start to see reports about people burning jerseys and it's us versus them. And that was a different time period, much more exciting also, I think. But then in 2004, it was a very different moment because Shaquille O'Neal was perhaps alongside Michael Jordan, one of the very few crossover stars. Like, not only did he have his, you know, failed music career to some degree, but he was in movies, he was in TV, he was ubiquitous. He was Shaquille O'Neal, he was larger than life. He was a big goofball, he was fun. He was also dominant as hell. He had just won, you know, 3 championships in Los Angeles and was this close to winning a 4th one, if not for the Detroit Pistons in 2004. But, of course, we started to hear rumblings slowly but surely. We didn't know exactly how bad those things were, but there was obvious tension between him and Kobe Bryant, and a decision had to be made. And, you know, the owners of the Lakers, they felt it was better to move on with Kobe, and they traded Shaquille O'Neal. I remember hearing about the deal and thinking to myself, you know, first and foremost, you freak out, right? Like, this is Shaquille O'Neal. This is a big deal. Not only is he a big player, the dominant player at the time when you're thinking to yourself, not only that you need a true powerful center in order to really run the table, in order to win a championship, you have to get a player. But this is the very best of them. This is one of the most dominant players in NBA history. And to be able to acquire a player like that, amazing. And then to say that he comes to Miami because he wanted to play alongside Flash, Dwayne Wade. And then you trade away half your roster, right? Lamar Odom, who I'll never forget how that one really stung to me, because Lamar had so specifically wanted to come to Miami. And he spoke about Pat Riley almost paternally. And, you know, just we've heard everything that happened with Lamar and his career since then. Of course, he was able to eventually win a championship, 2 championships, if I'm not mistaken, with the Lakers. But at the same time, you know, there was something about that union in Miami that felt right. And he was such a nice part of that growing young core alongside Caron Butler and Dwayne. And so it was kind of tough to see Lamar go. And then, of course, you know, there's all the other off the court things that impacted Lamar throughout the course of his life. And I think maybe things would have been a little different if he had stayed there. It's easy to play that what if game. But even in that moment there, it was tough to kind of see Lamar, who was a young, up-and-coming talent, a versatile player, when there was still the term unicorn wasn't even in existence yet, or at least not applied to basketball. But his skill set as a 7-footer was very, very different. And it was tough to see him go. Caron, a guy who had wept openly at the NBA draft a couple seasons before when he fell to 10th, when he was selected overall, given how his life had, you know, gone through incredible turmoil growing up, being arrested and everything else like that. The life that he had, and to see him now come full circle, return to Miami as an assistant coach, great story there. Brian Grant, older, you know, a true warrior in the sense that he had played undersized as a center at a time when that really wasn't acceptable. I mean, maybe 6'8"-ish, 6'9"-ish, I think, was he officially listed at a time, again, when they weren't quite as precise about listing their heights. And he had really done a great job after coming to Miami in 2000. He had been a true gritty player here. A guy who overachieved, I think, for at the center position, having to guard guys like Yao Ming and Shaquille on occasion and others. Brian did a fantastic job here in Miami. And to see those 3 guys, again, 3 starters, jettisoned over for Shaquille O'Neal, that was tough. But then you get Shaquille O'Neal on this roster. Like, I know it kind of gets to me a little bit, just the giddy moment, the thought process. You're all of a sudden at the top of the sports landscape. And I think that's what gets kind of lost in there. Of course, there's the run that fell just short in 2005. Then there's, of course, the 2006 titles. And then there's the obvious bridges that were, you know, sent into ash as he, you know, forced his way out to Phoenix, you know, a couple of seasons later. But in 2004, none of us understood what was going on. It was almost a sure thing that they were going to get a title. And you think of the progress, too, even as I'm talking about this. You know, there was those years with Alonzo and Tim Hardaway, right, where you're this close. And, of course, the Knicks always seem to get in the way. And then, of course, you trade for Eddie Jones. You trade for Brian Grant. You trade Jamal Mashburn away. And you have a rebuilt team here. And then Zoe diagnosed with a life-threatening disease that really kind of puts him in and out of the lineup for the next 3 years. He winds up leaving in free agency, joining the New Jersey Nets at that point in time. And then, of course, he winds up getting traded to Toronto and coming to Miami in a couple seasons. But at that point in time, still, he had just left. And then you get this rookie in 2003, and you're not really sure what the future of this team is. It's a nice move to get a Lamar. Stan Van Gundy is coaching. But you're able to pull off this blockbuster trade in 2004. And all of a sudden, again, at a time when it was just your daily paper and ESPN and local news coverage, it wasn't quite the same buzz in terms of, you know, you're not following this on social media. There weren't commercials and things about this sort, but it was still, it was the biggest name in the NBA coming to Miami and putting this team on a map in a way that I don't think they had ever been. Like, maybe they had an identity because of Pat as a gritty, defensive-minded team from 95 to 2004, but they had fallen short, and Shaquille made them relevant right away. And I think not only that, but he also brought like a level of enjoyment to the whole process, kind of like, you know, sitting back and enjoying a nice cold Michelob Ultra. To me, that moment really stands out as one of the greatest in Miami Heat history. And it was just the joy that fans felt in getting that big name player, to see Shaquille come back to the steps of the American Airlines Arena at that time, spraying everybody with water guns on a hot summer day, promising a parade down Biscayne Boulevard. All great moments. And look, I mean, that's basically it right there. When you watch the game and you're enjoying a nice cold Michelob Ultra, it's all about getting enjoyment out of it. And at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's easy to enjoy a Michelob Ultra. Joy creates success, and certainly it lent itself in Miami, where they were able to put all those great personalities together and forge ahead a couple seasons later after acquiring Shaquille O'Neal and bringing a championship to Miami. Enjoyment might not be the end game, but if you watch that team, you watch that acquisition of Shaquille O'Neal, you know that it's the whole game. Miami Heat are out of the playoffs, but the road to the finals still continues. And our coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. We can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Game 4 kicking off a little bit later on tonight. Filming this, or recording this, excuse me, on a Wednesday afternoon. So who knows? Maybe the Suns will take a commanding 3-1 lead. Maybe the Bucks are able to even it up. It's been a great series so far. Dominant performances from Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think the Bucks have certainly proved that they're a pretty dominant team. No shame for Miami Heat fans. And you know, one of the things that keeps standing out to me, and something that I'll talk about in an upcoming episode, is that this season, I don't know. I know a lot of people are going to go too far, because that's just the way everybody is nowadays, it seems, that everybody's going to look at this as a fraudulent season, or as the asterisk season, or anything like that. I feel like that seems like it's just beyond, you know, something that's going to happen pretty soon is that people are going to start questioning the validity of the scene. I've already seen some reports about it. I've heard some talk about it. I don't think it's quite to that extreme. I think diminishing any of the accomplishments of any team during this season is stupid, quite frankly. That's not to say that it hasn't been very difficult, and it's hard to ascertain anything specifically about this season. And I don't know whether or not Miami is a bad team, whether or not they're a good team, based on their finals run a year ago, or the fact that they were swept out in the first round this year. And I think that's the big question around the NBA for 30 teams is how much can you glean from this past season, and how does that build your team moving forward? How do you use what you saw this past year and use that as a template to move forward? The same way that Miami went to the finals in the season before and then kind of pump the brakes a little bit too soon on you know, tearing down this roster, and then seem, you know, quite ready to commit to, you know, players like Jay Crowder and others for multi-year contracts. They still had a big plan up ahead. I think a lot of teams are questioning whether or not what they saw this past season is a good rationale for how to move forward. I think that's the question. Again, I'll get into it a little bit more in an upcoming episode, but just wanted to kind of hint at it right now. But this one is a question that comes in via email from Brandon Patterson. He writes, a big fan of the show. Thank you so much. It's easy to get sucked into the offseason trade rumors and big flashy names, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on some more realistic trades and signings. As a completely unbiased Australian, I'd love to test the waters on Patty Mills this offseason. Another interesting pickup in free agency would be Jock Landale, who can be a stretch four and just won the NBL championship and received the finals MVP. So first of all, thank you so much for your question, Brandon. Now to Landale, I'll be honest with you. I think you could probably understand that I have not watched a lot of his performances. I have not seen him much at all, really, and this is a surprising question, so I'll say what I do know about him. He's 6'11", weighs about 260 or so, just played his last season over in Melbourne United, so I think he's a fine player. It seems like the type that Miami might be interested in. They're one player, I think, from even the Pacific area, I really want to say was Sean Marks, the general manager for the Brooklyn Nets. Like, that was the one player that they brought in. You know, I think Pat Riley is a guy who is a little, I won't go so far as to say opposed to international players, because I think Goran Dragic has certainly changed that perspective to some degree. But I think he's been burnt in the past by European players, so I think the scouting over in the Heat has kind of shied away from European players. I guess I think Landale is a different player altogether. I think he's the MVP, as you mentioned. He put in a fantastic performance. He's 25, almost 26 years old. He's got that touch from the outside that a lot of players are looking for, or a lot of teams are looking for. So he shot 39% on almost 4 attempts per game. So he sounds like the right fit there in terms of whether or not he'd be a great fit alongside Bam Adebayo. He's got a little edge to him from what I could tell, too. He plays physically. He's not shying away from contact. I guess he would technically be a free agent. I'm not sure if he would enter the draft or anything like this. I honestly don't know what his next move is. I know he plans on, according to reports, play in the NBA. He makes that his goal, and I think partly what gives him a little bit of that edge is that he kind of ran into some contract situations while he was playing in Europe, and he couldn't play in the NBA right away, but now he's continued to improve his game, and I think that's going to help him at that next level. So we'll see what happens. Maybe he turns into a fantastic player like Joe Ingles, another guy that I am a big fan of personally. So I'd be curious to see if they would have any interest in a guy like Landale. Again, I don't know how that process would work out. I don't know if they could just extend an offer to him, reach out and say, we'd like to bring you in. As a free agent, I guess technically he could sign anywhere. I mean, Ingles' path is so much more different, right? In that, you know, he was just a guy who got a tryout with the Clippers and then eventually he got cut as he was in his flight over, as we all know. So it was a very different time period, I think. For Landale, who knows? Maybe he'd get multiple offers as a free agent and maybe he'd just have to test the waters. Would he be interested in coming to Miami above all other teams? I don't know. There's a need for him there. I mean, certainly if you can get a guy like Landale who plays at the high level he does on a relatively cheap deal, considering he might be a relative unknown, although I don't think that is the case around the NBA, that would solve a lot of problems for Miami. But maybe he'd be interested in a 1-1 where he kind of proves it for one season and then enters free agency next year after a strong showing here. That's a tricky move if you're thinking about it from that perspective, because this is a guy who's looking to show out, right? And I don't know if he's looking to show out to the point where he's putting up big numbers at the sacrifice of team wins, and whether or not that meshes alongside a guy like Jimmy Butler, who's known to run a pretty tight ship. So interesting name, one to definitely keep an eye out. So I'll be curious to see whether or not any NBA team, including Miami, winds up signing a guy like that. But for Patty Mills, well, that's a tough question, right? And, you know, he spent his first 2 years in Portland. I had almost completely forgotten that back in 2009 to 2011. Has spent the last 10 years with the San Antonio Spurs. So now a free agent. From what I've heard from San Antonio, and I talked to Jeff Garcia over at Locked On Spurs and asked him about it. Patty is a Spurs lifer and a guy who he said, you know, Mills said specifically as he's entering this offseason, he still views himself as entering his prime and he's playing pretty well. And I think we saw in his most recent performance with the Australian Boomers national team upset over the Team USA in the Olympic exhibition games that he's still a pretty dominant force. He led the Australian team with 22 points, matching Dame Lillard's 22. And we've seen what Patty can do pretty consistently over the course of his career. He's a really solid shooter at 39% over the course of his career, 37.5 last year on all 6.3 attempts per game. So clearly a shooter, can run the pick and roll, smart, heady player. But there's a glut. I mean, they've got DeJounte Murray in San Antonio. They've got Derek White there. You know, there's some questions about whether or not there might have a need for Patty. And from what Jeff tells me, it looks like they're trying to usher in a new era, one that might usher Greg Popovich out of San Antonio because they're looking to go young. They're going to kind of turn the keys over to the younger players, and that might kind of force Patty's hand. Jeff thinks that Patty's likely to sign a team-friendly deal to stay in San Antonio, you know, where he kind of just transitions into being more of a mentor. That seems like it kind of doesn't really mesh with that thought process that he's entering his prime and wants to get paid as a player who's entering his prime. So I don't know why, if you're entering your prime, you'd rather just go, okay, yeah, go ahead, turn the keys over to Derek White or DeJounte. Again, I don't have the pulse of that team as much as Jeff does, so I'll you know, certainly give him credit for understanding that group much better than I do. I just reading that those assessments from him, I have a hard time understanding why Patty would say, yeah, this franchise that I won a championship with, that I played with, you know, for 10 seasons, that I've just grown to love, that I've been a part of, from Timmy to, you know, everybody else on that roster, why he'd want to leave that for an unknown opportunity. Maybe this is his last best chance at a payday. You know, that's an interesting question there. Again, he's made some money over the course of his career. How much of that matters to him is hard to tell. It certainly, there have been some really fantastic humanitarian efforts that he's been a part of since he's been in San Antonio, and maybe he just feels a strong level of comfort there. Maybe he's just willing to take a step back, as you know, even his own personal career, sacrifice some of his own personal numbers in the hopes that, you know, he can stay in San Antonio. But something doesn't seem quite right there, and you know, from heard from Jeff that it looks like they're bringing in other guards to potentially interview for a draft. And if that's the case, then there's going to be an even greater glut at the guard position, and that might force Patty's hand out in Miami. I think he'd be a great fit, guy with championship experience, tenacious, tough. You know, he's going to give it his all. It's a very different culture, I think, in San Antonio than it is in Miami. I mean, obviously, they've had great success there, just like Miami has, but still a little slightly different perspective, I think. So I wonder if Patty would bring some of that kind of global approach to the game that San Antonio is so well known for to Miami. It would be very interesting. He's got certainly enough dog in him, I think, where he could fit alongside Jimmy. He'd be a great fit. I don't know how much money he'll command on the open market. Again, he could take a team-friendly deal, as Jeff suggests, in San Antonio, or he could go for a big payday, and if that's the case, that probably prices him out. He's a good option, though. I would hope, for Miami's sake, they'll at least reach out to him. I don't know where he falls in their order in terms of what guards they'd want to bring to this team. You know, TJ McConnell certainly is up there. I think Kyle Lowry is certainly at the top. From that point forward, I'm not sure exactly where Patty falls, but I think it's an interesting question. I think he'd be a great fit here. I'd love to see him bring some of that championship mentality, because I think, and he's also a great locker room guy. So I think that's certainly something that would really help this team moving forward. If you want to maximize Jimmy's time here in Miami, you want to be able to get him a championship, surrounding him with players of that same mindset at this certain stage in their careers, I think certainly helps. And I think Patty fits that mold pretty well. So I think he's a nice addition if it winds up happening that way. So we'll just have to continue to read the tea leaves and see what happens next. But let me tell you a little bit about the Built Grasshopper cookie, a limited time flavor that you should definitely be trying from Built Bar. Again, the great taste of Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. And it's kind of like the classic Thin Mint cookie that everybody loves from the Girl Scouts. 150 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 5 grams of sugar. So it's a great, got all the nutrients you're looking for and all of that great taste alongside with it. But so many different flavors that I'm sure you'll love. Again, if you haven't tried them by now, you're doing yourself a disservice here, because their bars are great for you, have all the nutrients you're looking for. Everybody swears by these, whether they're friends or colleagues. I mean, just anybody I've talked to about Built Bars, really just, they can't stop raving about them. And probably because you don't even know you're eating a protein bar. They're soft, easy to chew. They're covered in 100% chocolate. Just delicious. I think you'll love them too. So if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED15, you get 15% off your order. Remember, Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. So use the promo code LOCKED15. And you'll get 15% off, but only if you go to BuiltBar.com. And with the money you save over at Built Bar, you can place a friendly little wager over at BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. There's so much going around the sports landscape with, of course, the Major League Baseball, the rest of the NBA Finals, the NHL, WNBA, so much is going on. Before your next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great information they have on their site. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device and sign up today to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Starting July 19th, the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will make selections and trades for your favorite basketball teams throughout this week-long special event. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. The draft, huh? Everybody's getting excited. I can't help but feel a little buzzed myself, even though I know Miami is not really invested in any player. I think maybe they'll start looking ahead. I've already heard that there will be holding some Zoom calls with potential players, maybe doing their due diligence to see if they'll slip out of the draft. And if they wind up going undrafted, maybe Miami can scoop up the future Duncan Robinson. Always exciting. So if you've got takes on any players that you think might be undrafted and you want me to go ahead and scout them, I'd be happy to get into that kind of research, because I honestly have not watched much college basketball ever, but specifically not this past season, because it's been a difficult one just to keep track of everything going on during a 72-game NBA season. Hats off to all the draft experts out there, because for them to be able to put in their work, although it's tough for me to take it all that seriously, because so much of what you can see in a player at the collegiate level, especially given a limited sample size, doesn't necessarily mean that they're guaranteed success at the NBA level or that they're guaranteed busts. Or, you know, look at a player like Duncan. All of a sudden something clicks, something works out differently, and you get the team that believes in you, that pushes you to the right level. And look, I've said it many times before, I still think Duncan winds up testing the free agent waters and another team throws in so much money his way that he can't say no. I think he's curious about the fit. I think he wants to be wanted because this is a first time experience for him at this level. You know, he didn't really have a lot of choices collegiately, didn't really have a lot of choices at the pro level. Miami believed in him, given him an opportunity, and they've helped him take his game to another level. But aside from all that, the way he talks about Eric Spoelstra, I think, has been so overwhelmingly positive that it's going to be a tough decision for him, but it's also a business, and hats off to him. If he makes the right choice for himself and he's happy with it, he can live with it, good for him. And Miami will just have to move on and find a way to replace some of that incredible shooting. But one potential option, maybe, I don't know, Kawhi Leonard. The news coming in that he's had surgery for a torn ACL. So a lot to kind of read into that. First and foremost, you wish for a speedy recovery there. As it applies to Miami, well, it looks like Kawhi is likely to miss a significant amount of time. I've seen reports that go anywhere from 3 months to 9 months, but given what Kawhi has done over the course of his career when it comes to rehabbing and everything else like that, there's a good chance he might miss most of all of the next season. So I don't know how that impacts Miami's decision-making process. I would assume that given Miami's own issues with medical background, medical history and their trainers and things of that sort, that maybe they'd be resistant to bringing a guy like that who was, you know, going to sit out most of the season, if not all of it. Again, you're on a limited time frame here with Jimmy Butler. You want to be able to cash in on these opportunities while you can. Doesn't seem like that's the right play for Miami. So that is something to consider. Now, conversely, there's some growing buzz that the Clippers trainers have misdiagnosed Kawhi's injury, that a lot of people were talking about that he might be available in the playoffs when clearly he had a significant injury that was going to force him out, and that maybe he does not trust that training staff again. We haven't heard any of this from Kawhi, obviously, nor would we, but there's some concern there that maybe he sees a potential gap growing between him and that front office or training staff and the coaching staff and things of that sort, and if that's the case, maybe he looks for other opportunities. I've said it before when I talked about the Kawhi option. I never really thought it was a realistic one, because I think once you go to a situation where you can control a lot of what happens, where you have a much more powerful voice as a player, even if it's just your entourage or the people that you surround yourself with, your group, your team, your party, whatever you want to call them, your circle, then when you have that established already, then I don't know why you'd want to leave that comfort, you know? One of the things we've always heard from LeBron's departure in 2014 is that he could never get his circle meshed with Miami's already well-established front office and their way of doing things. The fact that LeBron couldn't bring his friends onto the team plane, because that's just something that Miami had never and will never allow. And if that's the case, then he wanted things to be a little different. You know, could you say that Miami was a little too strict? Maybe. Was it unfair or unrealistic for LeBron to expect preferential treatment? As good as he is as a player, as good as he was at everything, why should he demand anything different than your 15th man on the roster? That's that's where I kind of lean towards things. I mean, are you really putting your friends out by asking them to take a plane? Look, I mean, you're LeBron James. You can pretty much afford any plane you want to take them alongside with you. Let them fly coach. It'll keep them humble, keep them grounded, I guess. I don't know. Maybe. It's tough. You know, I can never really argue one way or the other. I could see both points pretty well. But that has nothing to do with Kawhi Leonard. And we're not quite sure what Kawhi's intentions are. We're not really sure whether or not there is that growing divide between him and the training staff in Los Angeles. But I don't think Miami would realistically add a player like Kawhi, given the injury history, given the fact he's going to miss a significant amount of time, knowing where you're at as far as your time frame is concerned. And, you know, it kind of speaks to a bigger question here about Miami and what they do moving forward, because you do want to be able to bring a title here. And you also have to ask whether or not, you know, maybe a team's window closes a lot more quickly than you might assume. Like the Clippers were a great team without Kawhi, and they were able to push certain opponents for, you know, deep in the playoffs and everything else like that. But does the Clippers team now all of a sudden have a very limited window? I would say so. You know, you've had 2 years with Kawhi, one of them impacted by the pandemic. You kind of struggled in the Orlando bubble. Then you kind of struggle this year with injury and everything else, and you put up a really good, strong showing, and it wind up not falling, very flat of what your expectations were for the season. I think a lot of people still see them as one of the best teams in the Western Conference, but that doesn't mean anything. You actually have to be able to be the last team at the end to be the best team in the Western Conference. The Clippers just haven't been able to get to that point. So, you know, teams go through these processes all the time where the window all of a sudden closes on them before you know it. And you look at that 3-year run now. I mean, we're looking at a 3-year run for the Clippers because, again, last year in Orlando, they fell short. This year, they fell short. Next year, they're going to be missing Kawhi for a significant amount of time. What happens then? You have to look at these things when you're making these moves or projecting whether or not Miami should go all in and things of that sort. Things fall apart, whether you want them to or not. And I think that's just a reality around today's NBA. Something, again, I will talk about a little bit later. I know I never got to the Kyle Lowry segment, but I will talk about that in an upcoming episode too. But just a reminder, they can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. Be sure to please follow the show and leave a review. So many of you have, and I continue to ask you to do so. Thank you so much for everybody who has listened to this show, and special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting today's show. This is David Ramil signing off for now.